CliffCentral.com.
Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Right, folks, good morning. Welcome to Auto Central, motoring's biggest power hour, powered by Auto Trader, your trusted motoring marketplace. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter at Auto Trader SA, and remember to use the hashtag Auto Central in your tweets. In studio today, the usual suspects, George Mooney, Chad Lukoff. Hello, gents.
How's it?
How
good
you guys
afternoon.
Been? Are you well?
Yeah, lekker.
Good. Happy Monday.
Thank you.
How's the weekend been?
Quiet.
Is it?
Quiet, yeah.
Nice and relaxed.
Yeah, the way it's supposed to be, you know, spending time with family and doing those sort of responsibilities.
Yeah, exactly. I hear you. Children running around the house, sugared up.
Thankfully, I don't have that problem. So it's just, you know, a whole bunch of adults, all good.
George knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
Bouncing off the walls. Exactly. Yeah, interesting show today. I think let's jump straight into it. And the first thing that I saw, and we saw this in the news last week, was a Tshwane Metro Police campaign to curb speeding. And what these guys have done is they've actually gone out and printed life-size cutouts of cop cars, and they've like...
It wasn't even life-size. It was like scaled down.
Well, anyway, I mean, a cutout under a bridge. Let's discuss this for a bit. Is that going to slow traffic down? I know as a driver, when you see bridges, let's say you're doing a long trip away, you kind of look ahead in the distance to see if there are cops hiding under a bridge with their guns out, you know, ready to catch you for speeding. And naturally, when you see a cop car, I think your brain says, okay, well, check the speed limit, make sure you're not speeding.
Yeah, drop it down. There's a little bit of activity. As soon as you see a car parked under a bridge anywhere.
Yes.
Any car, actually, unless it's like gleaming in a strange color like green or red, then you're like, okay, I'm going to slow down. It's when it's one of those weird colors that you sort of know, okay, well, that's just somebody that's parked under a bridge. But my problem with it is how it's almost stereotypical in a sense that they've created the stereotype of we are only going to sit in the shade of a bridge and trap you from there. I'm not going to sit out in the middle of nowhere where you're not expecting it.
Yeah.
It's always under a bridge. So what do? Whenever we come to a bridge, naturally, we bring it down to the speed limit.
Yeah.
Yes, if we're sitting at that little, we all drive a little bit over the speed limit. There's no sense in us trying to pretend that we don't. Okay, well, I think we all do.
Yeah.
But we sit there, you know, 130. So we're not doing tons of speed, but we're doing a little quicker than the speed limit, and that's going to get us wrapped over the knuckles. Yeah. And we do that between the bridges. Because as soon as we get to the bridge, then we just drop it down that 10Ks back to the speed limit and accelerate up again, make some time. And now they're sitting there and they're playing on their own poor stereotype by placing this under a bridge.
Yeah, I mean, you know, George?
I don't know. Putting a car under a bridge in a cardboard cutout, especially scaled down, is like sitting on a Skype call with your boss and putting a picture of the office behind you.
Yeah, saying, I'm working late.
Yes. You're out of there.
It's like most of the news reporters, you know, they just dressed from the waist up. You know, downstairs, it's all party.
It's like, you know, you're not going to notice. I think it's not a good idea because people are gonna do what they've done now. All kinds of memes, all kinds of jokes, and people are going to be looking for cardboard cutouts from now on.
Unless
I think it just ridicules them. It really does. It paints them in such a poor light that, you know, these are the sort of pathetic, and I'm sorry, it is a pathetic, weak tactic to address a problem that needs a different solution. We know there needs to be a different solution
to curbing speeding
and enforcing the law.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think, you know, we should have 100% on kind of standby law enforcement on the highways, on the roads, you know, traffic cops and police that should be seen, that are about.
I mean, I think we've come a long way. You know, if you think back 15, 20 years, you could do 200 kilometers an hour and nothing much would happen.
Yeah.
You know, you could get away with it. Today,
no.
Today, everybody knows. Yes. If you are significantly over the speed limit, there is serious problems.
Yeah, there are going to be repercussions.
You know,
yeah.
So I think it's those kinds of measures that curb speeding more than a cardboard cutout.
Correct. It's the enforcement of the law, and I believe that the biggest problem, and I'm not going to rectify it, I'm not going to stand up and apply to be the Minister of Police now, saying that I've got all the solutions. But the problem is that it's the core that's the problem. You know, the inner management and the enforcement of the laws, whether it be the justice system, the courts, or however it is, that's a problem because there's so little consequence for your actions, or the consequence is unpredictable. Let's put it that way. Will I go to court? Won't I go to court? Will the docket get lost? Is it going to get squashed? Is this going to be drawn out? Or is there actually going to be a hard and fast, do not pass go, do not collect 200 rand, go straight to jail?
Yeah, rules are rules.
You know, rules are rules, and enforce them. And not and letting that filter through to the public-facing servants, the police officers and the traffic officers that are dealing with the public.
Mm.
Non-corrupt officials.
Yeah.
If you pay them well enough, you can sit there and say, any suspicion of corruption or any proof of corruption, you lose your job.
Yeah.
Now, Swaziland does that with their border officials. You cannot bribe a border official there. He gets paid so well. His housing is taken care of.
Yeah.
His day-to-day expenses in terms of groceries, electricity, water, and that sort of stuff is all taken care of. His children are put through school. This is all by the government. This is all part of being a border official in Swaziland.
And his job is just to do his job.
Just to do his job.
Yeah.
Now, he loses all of that if he's caught taking a bribe.
Yeah, so the risk versus...
Exactly, risk versus reward. Yeah. You can't pay him enough for him to accept that bribe.
Mm.
It's not worth his time.
Yeah, but also, you know, like I think in the United States, the prestige that comes with being a police officer...
And the respect.
And the respect that that police officer gets is what is probably lacking. Yeah, you know, the police officers are not respected enough. And to your point, they're probably not paid enough. Mm. They don't... They probably don't hire the right culture set that instills that sense of respect and that sense of, you know, I want to do the job to the best of my ability and uphold the law, and that's what I need to do.
As a civil servant, as someone who's not only just serving the people but your country as well.
Correct, yes.
I mean, I remember being a lati, I was scared of the police.
Oh, flip. Most people are today. But
you're scared of them for the wrong reasons.
But
it's not because of respect.
We're losing the respect for the traffic officers, not the other police.
Not the police, not necessarily SAP. I agree with you there.
Yeah.
Traffic officers, because it is one of those that it's so easy. And I mean, $50 is going to get you off. And we know this.
Mm.
And we take advantage of it. And if you sit there and you are one of those that regularly breaks the law, and I know people that are like this. I'm not one myself. I'm a bit of a stickler for the rules, and I don't like bribing because I'm just becoming a part of the problem.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just encouraging it.
Yeah.
And I'll sit there and I'll say, listen, write me out a ticket. Even if they come there and I can hear through their tone, because they're not allowed to ask for it,
but they're
sitting there and they're, oh, it's hot outside. And we've all heard that.
Yes,
oh,
yeah.
It's so hot here. You know, I really am thirsty. The guy's asking for Coke money. Okay.
Yeah.
Plain and simple. And I sit there and I'm like, if there's a problem, write out a ticket, do the paperwork, do your job, I will pay it, I'm guilty of this offense as charged, whatever it was, I'll pay. And you know how many have just let me go because they're not wanting to do their job. They're rather just sitting there trying to elicit the quick money instead of, let me do my job and let me get it over and done with. Those people that have encountered those and that are prone to bribing and that, no doubt they've encountered the couple of odd police officers, traffic officers, let's put it that way, traffic officers, that are not like that. And they do exist. Trust me, they do exist.
No, for sure.
And there's nothing that you say that is going to soften the blow, and he's going to sit there and be offended that you've actually suggested sorting this out in another manner. And he's going to go through the whole rigmarole of running plates, running licenses, writing out the tickets, et cetera, et cetera. And he's going to do it with pinpoint precision.
Yeah.
I've got mad respect for those.
Mm.
That's your job. Cool. I've been caught. Pay the dues.
Fine. But listen, I mean, in this day and age with technology and, you know, everything that we have, you know, access to, cameras,
mm-hmm.
you know, put a camera under every bridge. I know that I mean, are we going to stop people from speeding by doing that?
No, the thing is, when you sit with a permanent camera, people learn where permanent cameras are. You know where the permanent cameras are down Republic Road, on the M1, on the M2. You know where they are, you know, and everybody, it just slows down and it just causes this massive Constantina effect as everybody's rushing from 120, 130 down to 110 because they're scared. Mm-hmm. And this just has such a backlog, and this Constantina effect just runs backwards and forwards, and it ripples throughout the entire traffic. I don't believe that that's a solution.
So I don't think cameras under bridges is a solution. What is effective, in my opinion, you see this in the UK a lot, mm-hmm. And you see this down to Durban a little bit.
Yes,
is the average speed.
Yeah. Those nail you.
Yeah, the average speed cameras, because you can't consistently speed. And your average goes over the speed limit very quickly, like to Chad's mm-hmm. point. If it's 120 kilometer an hour zone and you're on the border at 130, just spend 5 minutes at 140 and
that average is shot.
That average is shot. You're going to get nailed.
Yeah.
So
you need to do like 90 Ks an hour
in
order to rectify that.
Yeah.
But averages, I mean, the way the maths works is just, it's actually disturbing. And it's quite an effective way of going about things. And I've seen it. I travel the N3 a fair amount. And on the N3, the people are generally more disciplined.
They are. Because there are so many cameras. There's those average speed cameras,
yes.
And there's so many of these police officers standing on the side of the road doing what I don't know, but it just instills
it's visible policing, and that makes a difference.
Yeah,
you
know, make a difference.
When you know that they are out and about, then you sit there and I don't know if they are around the next corner.
Yeah.
And it's not going to happen overnight, but, you know, eventually with enough visible policing and random sort of checks and stopovers and that sort of stuff, people are going to know that, well, I can't run the risk because I'm just getting nabbed around each and every blind turn, you know, by breaking the law. So let me not break the law and let me counter it. But once again, it only works if you've got officers that can respectfully enforce this. I'd like to see the sort of effect that you get in the States, where they can actually calculate your speed from the patrol vehicle behind you. Let them drive behind you, and they get a match on, they've got a camera in the car, etc., etc., they pull you over, bang, my system's calibrated X, Y, and Z, and we are traveling behind you, and we got you at that speed. Then you haven't got a cooking clue when it's happening.
Yeah.
This unmarked car pulls up behind you. Mm. You could be in trouble.
Yeah. Mm.
You know that happened to me in Cape Town.
Not the
speeding thing, but I answered a phone call.
George.
In Cape Town, and
you should know better.
And you know, it was a while ago, and the laws had just begun to kind of take effect.
Yeah.
And what I didn't realize was that Cape Town had unmarked motorbikes with cops on them.
Ghost squad.
Not that I was, you know, answering the phone looking for a cop.
I just answered the
bloody
phone. Naturally answered the phone, yeah.
And next second, I had this police officer with his lights on his motorbike behind me, pulled me over. And I believe that in Cape Town, they can confiscate your phone.
Wow.
Jesus.
That their bylaws allow for them to confiscate your phone, put it in a locked box somewhere, and you have to pay a fine in order to get that phone out.
But nothing wrong with that. And I mean, I have encountered it, once again, friends of mine. That always sounds like I'm always just pinning it on a friend. But friends of mine also very strict in terms of DUI, and went out, had a few drinks, wasn't under the influence, but was over the limit in terms of BAC, blood alcohol content.
Yeah.
And went out, thought, okay, I'm going to go and grab a drink, go and grab a bite to eat. I've just had one or two drinks with dinner. I'm still okay.
Yeah.
Body hadn't processed it completely. 0.001 over. So 0.055 is what he blew on a 0.054 limit.
Oh, so it was
.001 over. Do not pass go. Do not pay 200 rand. Go straight to jail.
But
Spend the night.
I think that's serious. That's probably one of the most serious things.
It is.
I won't even have one drink and drive.
No.
It's just not in.
I mean, listen, it changed the way that we go about things, and we don't touch alcohol. If we've got our car keys in our pocket, we don't touch alcohol.
There's no way.
Just because it's just so much safer. Because that was fortunately a safe wake up call. And listen, no correspondence was entered into.
Yeah.
I don't care if you that tiny bit amount, because had they breathalyzed him 15 minutes later, his body probably would have processed it, and he would have been under. But it was just so small that, you know, and it was 200 meters from the pub as well, and it just scared us into thinking that, you know, if I spent a night in jail, what would have happened if I was in an accident? Even if it wasn't my fault,
no, exactly.
it becomes your fault because I'm under the influence. I'm over the limit.
Believe it or not, the body can only process alcohol at a constant rate. So if you drink too much, the only thing you're doing is you're extending the time to being sober.
Mm-hmm.
You can drink as much water as you want. You can eat whatever you like. That time to the blood alcohol content coming down just extends the more you drink. Okay. Your body reaches a point at which it only processes the alcohol at a certain rate, and that is a constant rate.
Yeah.
So people think that they can wait 2 or 3 hours. Not always.
No. I mean, I don't know what it is exactly, but I recall it being something like a single beer, half a glass of wine takes an hour to process. I may have those figures wrong, but it's something like that, you know. So, I mean,
The liver can process 1 ounce of liquor in 1 hour.
Yeah.
That's the rate at which it can process alcohol.
So, I mean, an ounce isn't much.
Yeah.
You know, that really isn't a lot. No. So, once, if you have been drinking, you know, you need to be.
So 1 ounce per hour is what it can process. Okay. So anything over 1 ounce an hour,
mm-hmm.
it starts to put into your blood and your body tissue. And then it has to process that later.
So later. So it stores it and then slowly starts to work it out of the system.
At 1 ounce an hour.
At 1 ounce an hour.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's, all right. That makes sense now. So
I know my liver's always working, which is fantastic.
Wonderful. Nice to know.
It works out to apparently 0.016% per hour it's metabolized.
Jeez, like.
And it's
crazy.
At that rate that
it's actually disturbingly slow.
I don't know if you find it in the circles that you guys mix in, but if you take how. If I look at my friends, for an example, 10 years ago, no one ever said, are you driving home?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That just wasn't a question. Now it's like, I hope you're not driving, are you?
No. And then
and the answer is, no, I'm not.
Yeah.
Because
people have become, you've gotten older and there are different responsibilities, families and the likes and that. And we're a little more aware of our mortality now and the risks involved.
Yeah.
You know, our young carefree years, it wasn't as high on our priority list, let's put it that way, to our own safety.
No, it was just like, I'll take it. But
the consequence for it has been made more aware, and it has started sinking in. And now, folks, it is that silly season, and we're going to start hearing about the death tolls and that. Please, I know you hear it preached and that, but if you are listening in,
rather just give it
to somebody that isn't drinking, because we are going to be celebrating, we are going to be brying and partying and having a good time and that. Just make a plan, and there are so many solutions. If you're out and about, Cape Town's got some fantastic public transport. Durban you can get around in as well. Even Joburg you can get around in. Think of what you're spending on the alcohol, and think of what you'd spend on the equivalent Uber or taxi ride, car train ride or whatever to get home.
Yeah.
Really, it's not much. In terms of your safety and everybody else's safety as well.
A lot of people
well.
Having obviously gone away this long weekend will obviously be making their way back today.
Yeah.
And I always ask myself, what is the rush? There is no real rush. If you leave early enough, you'll never be late.
Correct.
But, I mean, Chad can bear this out. Rushing doesn't significantly cut the time off a trip. What I've found in long trips is there are two main factors that affect your time significantly more than speeding. The one is keep the vehicle moving.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So at the speed limit, keep the vehicle moving. Don't slow down to 80 k's an hour for a long period of time. A lot of people lose, get distracted, and then they're talking to people in the car, and they're doing 80 k's an hour for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
That significantly slows down your arrival time. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, leave early, because then you're relaxed, miss the traffic.
Exactly.
Those two things significantly change your driving time versus speeding. Exactly. Speeding doesn't really bring down your arrival time.
No, it is so minimal. And I mean, we see it so often in traffic. If you're arsoning and then you're taking that lazy drive, and you got that guy, I had one this morning on the way here, and the guy was up my tail, and then he was around me, and he cut me off, and he was bobbing in and out of traffic. And I saw him up ahead as he was doing the same stunt, cutting people off and lane changing aggressively, left, right. So I'm like, okay, well, listen, clearly you're in some massive hurry. Yes. Go and be a tool somewhere else on the road. Okay, get out of my area here. You're being a nuisance. And you know what? About 5 minutes later, I pulled up right behind him at the same traffic light. I'm like, really, dude? Yeah. What was the point?
Yeah. And his fuel consumption bill went up.
Exactly. He's sitting there. He's more stressed out and aggravated because he's in and out and taking these chances and that. I got there considerably more relaxed. Okay, granted, he irritated me, but I got there more relaxed, and he was wound up, and he just irritated so many people behind me as well and around me. I was like, really, what is the point?
Yeah.
Predicting traffic flow and driving ahead, planning ahead in terms of long distances and that, I find that to be a greater time saver. So if you sit there and you're not driving here just, you know, 3-4 meters in front of your car, and you're watching the road ahead, you can see when the lanes merge and they become one, and you can get into the correct lane.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you can see where there's a toll gate, and you can get your money ready,
yeah,
you know, or the card ready, and you can start choosing your lane.
No,
start planning ahead and predicting, and that way you'll see how many cars you pass.
Yeah.
Not through speeding, through planning ahead.
Yeah.
Okay, the road's going to widen and open up there. I can move off to the side and let this guy that's faster pass me. But okay, there's a slow moving truck. I'm just going to wait the five, you know, the 2 minutes that it's going to take to get to where the lanes open up again. There's two lanes, and then I'm going to pass him.
Yeah.
I don't need to be unnecessary.
Overtake on a white line or on
a blind rise, because that's one of the biggest killers this time of the year.
Yep.
Is people are in such a rush, and sadly it's the taxis that are trying to just maximize the profit. Passing on blind risers, and this is where the big head-on collisions, multiple fatalities happen.
Yeah.
If you approach a blind rise, start predicting that there could be oncoming traffic and move slightly over to the left of the lane.
Mm.
Don't move into the hard shoulder. Move to the left of the lane and be ready to swerve.
Yeah.
Take a look at your escape. Always plan your escape.
Yep.
In situations that could be risky, but you need to be able to identify this.
Mm.
And I've seen this with too many people of late. They just not predicting what's happening around
most
them.
Most people drive just watching the car in front of them.
In their own little
bubble. I was taught to drive very differently.
When you're
looking 3, 4, 5 cars ahead as to what you're saying.
Traffic lights and the likes.
Yeah.
Approaching that red light, drop your speed a little bit, because you may just catch that green, then you don't have to stop. One, you're saving fuel. Two, you're saving time.
Yeah, exactly. Talking about driving, I mean, obviously, you know, over these holiday periods, South Africa does have, you know, really, really different kind of weather conditions. And I think, you know, driving styles, when, I don't know what it is, but when it rains in this country, oaks go, you know, ballistic, and they think it's now time to speed and, you know, slam on brakes.
Mm.
And it's,
yeah, you know,
what is that? I don't know what it is. Like, why, when the water hits the road, do you think, I don't know, is
just,
it just me,
just,
or do you all?
I think people's driving styles don't change between dry and wet, and that's the key difference. You've got to change your driving style. Because of the grooves in the tires, people think that seem to think that that tire is going to stick to the road like it does in the dry weather.
Yeah.
And the difference is yes, it sticks to the road, but that point of breakaway is so unpredictable that when it breaks away, there's nothing you can do. Whereas on a dry surface, when the tire does break away from the tire and start sliding, you've got a little bit more control. But in the wet, you've got nothing. You're just going to
a lot of it, what I find, is your high-end vehicles. And with me driving a variety of vehicles that come with different safety systems and driver aids, it breeds a complacency as well. Like I've spoken about convenience, breeding a complacency. The same thing happens with your driver aids in terms of driving at night and driving in wet weather. Yeah, but I can do 140 here on the highway in the wet because I've got ABS and ESC and TCS and EBD and all this sort of stuff that's going to save me. You know, the car can't spin out.
Yeah.
All this electronic aids, no, it's not going to come to your rescue. There's a certain point where even those have their limits. George,
well, I mean, a classic example is my car's got adaptive cruise control, and I love using it. It's brilliant, but I don't use it in the wet.
You should never use cruise control in the wet, actually.
Because, not because of the cruise control, but because the car brakes as if it's on dry surface.
Yeah, well, the car doesn't know that it's raining.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So when the traffic starts coming to a standstill and that adaptive cruise control decides to begin braking, it only brakes. As if it's on a dry surface, which is pretty hard.
Yeah.
Now, imagine, paint this picture here quickly. You're using cruise control in the wet and your car starts aquaplaning.
Yeah, what's it going to do?
What is that going to tell the car? Okay, you've started aquaplaning. It's starting to slide. All of a sudden, it's trying to keep you going, so it's applying a throttle. All of a sudden, your wheels start spinning because you're aquaplaning. What is it going to do now? Is it going to break? You don't want to break when you're aquaplaning. Okay. Now the car's doing all of this and you don't have the opportunity to rectify this. By the time you're rectifying this, it's too late.
Well, what is the thing that cancels the cruise control when you're driving? It's the brake pedal.
Brake pedal or the clutch pedal?
Brake pedal, clutch pedal.
Or manual interaction, yes.
And usually people become passengers when their car starts aquaplaning and they don't touch anything. Some people brake instantaneously. But if you don't touch anything, I think it's even more dangerous because that cruise control is not going to know what to do.
It's not going to know what to do.
Well, what is the best way to get out of that? And you can tell me because I wouldn't.
Well, I mean, Chad will probably know more. But in my limited opinion,
yeah.
If you start aquaplaning and you're in a front wheel drive car, don't touch the brake.
That's so rather accelerate and try and get out of it.
No.
Just
I've crashed.
Just let the momentum take you through that water.
Okay.
Let it take you through the water. Let it regain grip before you can put any sort of input in. Okay. Again. You accelerate, you may just exacerbate the situation by once again breaking traction, and then when it does grip, you've possibly turned the wheel slightly or something of the sorts, and as soon as it grips, it's going to slingshot you in another direction, which is going to become a whole new problem of trying to correct it.
Yeah.
Braking does the same. You've broken the traction circle. The traction circle is a little bit of a technical explanation, but once you're outside of the traction circle, bringing the vehicle back under control requires a very keen understanding of what is happening and keen inputs and small inputs to bring it back.
Okay.
It's not anything major. So you basically, if you have to, you ease off slightly, not massively, just slightly ease off just to place a little bit of weight on the front end to try and push the nose down. That's all you can do. You do too much of that, no, game over.
Sure. Scary stuff, actually, if you think about it. And you've always said, you know, that you've only got four points of contact on the road.
That's the size of your hand. Combined, that is the size of an A4 page of paper.
That's what...
For a two-ton vehicle, doing what sort of speed? As you know anything about physics, you'll know that an object in motion.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know that... So I just think people, please just, you know, take it safe on the roads. Don't drive like a chop and...
Don't rush, pay attention.
Smog, if you're driving, you know, when the sun's coming up or the sun's going down, you know, make sure that you are, you know...
Try and plan around that. Your travels. And I mean, yes, us driving down to, from Joburg down to the coast, you know, especially like Durban and that sort of stuff. If you're going to do that in the morning, expect to drive into the sun.
Yeah.
So why don't you do it the other way around? You go from, let's say, 11 o'clock or 10 o'clock in the morning. Once the sun has risen a bit, you drive from there down and the opposite when you're coming back. You drive in the morning.
Yeah.
So that you're not driving in the afternoon into that sun.
So the flip side of that is, and this is me as a sample of one, if we're going on holiday, I'm kind of in the car 4 o'clock kind of person, you know. And you do get the sun. You really do.
Well, depending on which direction you're traveling.
Yes, exactly. It also depends where you're traveling. But you also, you know, you just take it easier because the roads aren't as busy that early in the morning. And I always feel like I've got the jump on the majority of the people that are going to be going on holiday.
Correct. But,
you know,
I mean,
so
if you're
ahead of the pack.
If you take a look at your prime accident hours, it's that dusk and dawn.
Yeah.
It really is, because visibility and your depth perception is thrown out by the length of the shadows and the likes and refractions of light. It's a tricky time to drive, and it really does take an experienced hand. And I would only suggest driving at those times if you actually know the roads.
Yeah.
If it's roads you haven't traveled,
no, for sure.
Then try and travel it during the day. Just make sure that the aircon's working if you're driving through the Karoo or something of the sorts, you know, if it's unplanned. And make sure the phone's charged and make sure you have your cable with you.
Yeah.
And just, you know, there's ways and means out of it. It's no longer traveling the way it was, where you're sitting there with a map book and a little bit of a fear. Okay, I'm not too sure when the next garage is. You've got the beauty of your cell phone. Yeah. Pull over to the side of the road, check where you are, check where the nearest garage is, check where the road's going, X, Y, and Z, what the conditions are, and then make your way back on the road with a slightly better idea of what's coming.
Yeah.
But don't do it. Mm. Folks, leave your phones alone. Put it in the cubby hole and forget it, please.
Yeah, exactly.
There is no SMS, there's no WhatsApp, there's no Snapchat, there's nothing that is that important that needs to be answered. None. I can promise you, there is none. Nothing is that life or death.
Yeah.
So that you need to check it while you're driving.
Pull over in a safe spot and then, you
know, when you stretch your legs and that. Let the people know that are expecting you to contact them. Listen, I'm driving and I'm pretty sure that they'll understand, hey, you know what, you can't chat.
Yes. Okay, which takes me on to my next point. And we all know what happened a week before last. Last week, Friday. Was it a week before last?
I don't know, it's all a blur.
I don't know, it is all a blur. But anyway, people went out, marched, happy days. And we've seen subsequent to that that there have been some kind of downgrades in terms of our ratings by the ratings agencies. And what the question I want to ask is, what impact is that going to have on the average South African motorist?
So if you think about the impact of a downgrade like this into what's now referred to as junk status, and there's three rating agencies, and usually if two downgrade us, the third one will.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, people say, well, why? But the effect of a downgrade of this nature goes all the way down the yield to the consumer.
Yep.
It's inevitable because people will be nervous to invest in the country. Now, countries lend money from each other and from central banks, etc. That rate of interest that gets charged
to service the debt,
of a junk status country now goes up.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that you have debt on is going to become more expensive.
And at the end of the day, if you're earning, a really fat salary, you're not going to feel it as much. It's those guys that are earning average wages who are, eating, we know what the dry salty crack looks like at the end of the month. Bread goes up, milk goes up.
The lower half of the middle class is going to feel it. Middle and lower is going to feel it.
The reason all of those things go up is because everything that is anything in an economy stems from debt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Companies, banks, individuals are lending money backwards and forwards all the time.
Yep.
And so the price of a loaf of bread goes up as a result of lending rates going up.
Yes.
And that's what trickles down, Neil. Yep. And let's be honest, it doesn't matter what salary anybody earns. South Africans are seriously in debt at every level. And so everybody is going to feel this, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure petrol's going to go up now. Cause everything goes up, and then that increases the the cost of getting the likes of bread and milk to shops.
Mm. Now let's tie it back into the car game. Now there's not only the fact that if you are looking to buy a vehicle, can't expect a fantastic interest rate on it.
Yeah.
Okay. The general lending rate is going to go up, no doubt. Chances are we're going to see that. So your prime is going to change from your 10. I believe it's sitting at 10.5 at the moment. I think 10.5. It's going to It's going to go up. Let's say it's going to hover at 11.5. Heck, this may even completely deteriorate and end up at 13. Not only that, so you're paying, let's say you're lucky enough that you get prime. Mm. 13% of the value of your vehicle, you're going to be paying in interest.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money, okay? Should you get a slightly worse one, prime plus 5, whatever, something of the sorts, you're going to be paying nearly 20% of that vehicle's price just for the fact that you financed it.
Yeah.
That's money burnt, flushed.
Yeah.
Now, not only that, you're wanting to purchase a new vehicle. That vehicle has been imported.
Yeah, so import costs, import duties,
import
the costs,
and the taxes and all this sort of stuff is going to go up. Because how does the company rectify the fact that they're now working with this higher lending rate internationally?
Yeah.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
They bump the taxes up.
Yeah.
Because that's where they pay for the interest, is through taxes and other costs. So petrol's going to go up. Taxes are going to go up. It's all going to get quite nasty. Okay, VAT and import duties, places where they can make money, is all going to go up.
Uber's going to go up.
The imported car that you're buying, and even the non-imported car, there's just going to be a greater margin on because it needs to be priced competitively and at a market-related price.
Mm.
But that vehicle that you're purchasing now is going to be more expensive. We can expect to see car prices go up to the point where the cheapest new car that you can buy by 2018 may cost you over 200,000 rand.
Yeah, that's
a near 200% increase over what they cost now.
I think what's more important though is understanding how long it's going to take us to come out of this.
Mm.
On average, an emerging market country takes about 7 years to get out of this downgrade.
Okay.
So it takes about 7 years to get out of it.
So we've got a long hill to climb.
And I just try to take a look at the country that took very long to get out of it. The last time was Colombia, got downgraded, And it took 12 years for Colombia to get out of its problem as a result of being downgraded. So,
do they then change the status of Colombia again to a non-junk status, to where it's actually
The S&P and Fitch, etc., would assess it on a regular basis, and the fact of the matter is that this is going to take us a while to get out of.
Well, I always maintain, you know, it's cutting your finger, a paper cut or something, happens in the blink of an eye. But it takes considerably longer for that to heal.
Yes.
So, you know, the cut has happened.
Yeah.
And now the healing process. And let's hope that the cut has stopped. Because if we continue cutting it, it's just going to take longer for that healing process to start.
Yeah.
So the healing process, I mean, the whole New South Africa thing, we've been doing it for 25 years or something of the sorts, 23 years now.
Yeah.
And, a bit laughable at best. It's not exactly increasing.
The only thing that can bring down that 7 years is how we respond.
Yeah, and well, look, I think we're a resilient bunch. You know, I think we'll fight through as we do.
I mean, I've got mad respect for the South African mentality and the South African approach to dealing with tough times. I mean, the 2009 recession came around and we were like, huh, what? What recession?
Yeah.
Our belts have already been tight. We're so used to living this lifestyle that while the world is running around waving their handbags in the air with their hair on fire, we're sitting there saying, well, this is a normal Tuesday for us, guys.
Exactly.
You know, we're quite okay with this. It can only get better.
Yeah. Exactly. So anyway, well, you know what? I think, you know, we're just going to have to suck it up. We're going to have to go at the flow. I think we'll, you know, continue to fight forward and we'll see what happens over the next
few
months.
Try not to make unnecessary debt, folks. Yes. There are certain things that you can live without. Streamline your needs and your wants. If you don't need a new car, you know.
Yeah.
Come to Auto Trader and buy a second-hand.
100%
exactly.
You can go with a used vehicle. Correct. There are so many good used vehicles. And I think, George, we're going to see that in the car market. I think we're going to see an increase as we did last year.
We've already started seeing it.
Used car sales as opposed to new car sales.
We already started seeing it after the end of last year, around about October, November.
Mm-hmm.
We started seeing, you know, everybody knows how much under pressure new car sales have
been. Correct,
And we've started seeing a swing to people beginning to buy used cars.
Well, you know, when you talk about that, even if you do buy a used car, for that individual,
it's still
a new car. Yeah. It's
some
a new
some
car.
People want just that new, I need to be the first one.
Mm.
You know, that then it's mine from
so
the box.
You can have that smell, hey?
The thing is, you know, you take such a massive...
you can.
We can engineer that. The depreciation on a brand new vehicle is absolutely astronomical. You're taking such a loss there. If you purchase a clean, tidy, relatively low mileage used vehicle, I mean, there's tons of them out there. Trust me, there are tons of them out there. And you're not going based on status and what people are thinking, and you're just actually being a little more sensible about this purchase, you can climb into a vehicle that is not going to depreciate terribly over the next 2 years that you're going to be driving it. Let's say many people change in about every 2 years, correct, George?
Yeah.
It's about a two-year cycle.
Well, I mean, 2 to 3. It depends. You know, on average, maybe closer to 3 years.
Yeah, okay.
Some people take up to 5.
Okay.
And I reckon that's going to extend.
On average. Well, yeah, I think we're going to see them holding on to their cars for a little bit longer because, well, we're not in the position, and why make debt?
Yeah.
And I tell you what, I had a vehicle that I financed, and when it was paid off, I can't tell you the feeling. It was absolutely amazing to know that all that I actually need to pay on this car is the insurance and the running costs, the petrol in it.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's mine. The best car, folks, is the one that's paid off.
Exactly, 100%. I couldn't agree more.
Stick with it, get it maintained, and carry on running with that. If you have to buy, consider use. There's so many good vehicles out there, and you won't be taking a bath. You're not going to be losing too much money in the long run, even with this higher interest rate and that.
Exactly.
And that's if you have to, absolutely have to. Not because you want to, because you have to.
Well, listen, that's been a fantastic chat, and, you know, take it easy like Chad says. What I want to do quickly before we get into news and reviews, where we're going to be discussing a little bit of a showdown that you guys
shot. Yeah, we did a little bit of a shootout.
Between the Mitsubishi Triton and the Mazda BT50.
Yeah, the BT50.
I just want to touch. I mean, obviously, you know, F1's back. Season has started again.
It is.
George is licking his chops here.
I love that thing.
I think he does.
I'll see you guys in 5.
Okay. Well, listen, so I've never really been a huge fan. I mean, I'm more MotoGP than
Well, listen,
than
James F1. Dean is doing wonderful things in Formula Formula Drift. I mean, he's coming in there and upsetting the apple cart if you want to talk about season starting.
Well, there we go.
Well, talking about Formula Drift, this Sunday was like Formula Drift on that F1 circuit, let me tell you. Well, let's rewind back 2 weeks. Started off the first GP in Australia two weeks ago, and nobody wanted to see another whitewash by Mercedes-Benz.
Yes.
It makes Formula One boring when one constructor dominates the entire season. And Ferrari's been battling for a long time to get their car to the right place with these new hybrid engines to keep pace with the Mercedes-Benz. And this year, the fight is on. First race in Australia, Sebastian Vettel won it. And led the drivers' championship, and this Sunday now in China, Sebastian Vettel was placed second on the grid, Lewis Hamilton first on the grid, and it was touch and go, and that race would have been a very different to what the outcome was. Lewis Hamilton won the race, and Sebastian Vettel came second. So in the drivers' championship, Sebastian and Lewis are neck and neck at 43 points. And in the Constructors' Championship, the Mercedes are leading with 66 points and Ferrari's on 65. So the battle is definitely on this year between Ferrari and Mercedes, and it's absolutely awesome. I'm supporting Sebastian Vettel, but that's because I've been a Ferrari fan because of the likes of Schumacher. Okay. But what was very interesting was Max Verstappen. He gained 16 places in Sunday's race.
Wow.
And I think,
and that's just due to straight racing. It wasn't due to a pile up or massive incident or a random tire change or anything of the sorts. It was just good driving.
Is phenomenal. Drives the Red Bull car, and 19 years old.
Jeez.
19-year-old teenager gained 16 places. I think that Sebastian Vettel is the next Schumacher. That's my opinion. I think watch out Lewis Hamilton and Vettel, because maybe he won't beat those two this year. But put him in the right car,
and he's
going to do something special. I mean, I think the Red Bulls are very powerful. I think the Red Bulls have got a good shot at number two or number three, and maybe next year they'll be a force to be reckoned with. But first, watch for Verstappen. I think put him in the right circumstance. And
well, it's good to hear that it's not a procession anymore, and you know that there's a little bit of chopping and changing, and it is still anybody's race. Let's put it that way.
This year, definitely. If you think that Formula One's boring, it's not this year.
Well, you know, the same can be said about the MotoGP. I mean, I haven't been watching too much, but I have been following Brad Binder, who's now moved up a class to MotoGP.
Yes,
Moto2, and in his first Grand Prix, was lying in 21st position, and you never get to see them riding because the camera's always on the guys in the front.
Up front.
So you're literally watching a race, and you're just watching this BRB go up and down.
A little ticker on the side, yeah.
But last week, he finished in the top 10.
Oh, fantastic.
So, brilliant. You know, that's a 10 place jump in his second race.
Two races a season, correct.
You're starting to hear his name a little bit more. So, you know what, Brad, just keep, do what you're doing, man. It's phenomenal.
Now, if only we can get a couple of the local corporates and the government behind our motorsport drivers and riders overseas, because it's not only them. I mean, we've got the likes of the Funderlanders that are out there, and they're also driving, and they're doing fantastic things, and they're really driving well and holding the South African flag high.
Yeah.
But this is all self-funded.
Yep.
They're all essentially privateers, and it's so sad that they're not getting that sort of support and backing. And this is massive. I can tell you now that for the Binders, this is crippling. They are throwing everything they've got into their son's dream, and it's...
Well, look, I mean, the guy's living it, and maybe he, can elevate the profile of motorsports in South Africa. But if you have a look at the festivals that are coming around, if you have a look what's happening in the industry, I think...
SA Bike Fest coming up.
We touched on that,
last 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, so I think it's good. So, if you're a Formula One or a MotoGP fan, stay tuned. I think it is going to be an exciting season. Before we run out of time, Chad, let's chat.
It's an interesting video. The shootout.
Exactly.
Video.
It's on Auto Trader under the news and review section.
News and review section, and on our YouTube channel. And you can subscribe to our YouTube channel. And we've got about, we like to let a video out every week, a new one out every week. Not always possible, and sometimes you get two in a week. So. You never know. Subscribe, and you'll receive the notifications, and that's the best bit of it. Instead of having to go back and check. We don't run it like a TV show or like a TV channel.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's not a, ooh, it's 8 o'clock on a Wednesday. I need to go and watch, you know. So let it come to you and watch it at your leisure and that. This one we did, the two vehicles, both of them double cabs. We had the Mitsubishi Triton, the 2.4 DID double cab 4x4 auto. Mm-hmm. And then a new addition to the Mazda BT fleet, which isn't the top of the range one, but it is a double cab. It's the 2.2, the BT50 2.2 double cab SLE auto. Okay, so it's not a 4x4 and it's not the big 3.2 litre motor. Now, the Mazda BT50 isn't a completely new vehicle, it's rather just a facelift.
Okay.
And Mazda knows this, and they're not looking at selling big numbers of this vehicle either. They're looking at, you know, maybe 1,000 units a month. So very, very low numbers. But this one, the SLE Auto, is now a new edition. It was only available as a manual before. It's now available as an auto for the Mazda BT50. Sadly, that's the biggest downside to the Mazda BT50 is the fact that it's based on, let's say, 5-6 year old technology of the BT50, whereas the Triton is like all new. And straight away, that's a chalk and cheese. Double cabs, buckies, mini trucks, LCVs, however you want to take it, have progressed so much over the past 3 years that they've changed from being this agricultural almost implement into something that drives like a sedan or an SUV.
Well, it's a sedan with a big boot, isn't it, really? You know?
It's they're driving. They never used to.
No,
you know, the rides were
always
the rides
hard.
Were choppy and harsh, and you needed this this sort of iron-fisted approach to changing gears. It was a very mechanical, hardy. It wasn't something that was necessarily easy to drive.
Yeah.
It would wander on the road and be a little bit noisy, and you'd hear the motor underneath. Sadly, the Mazda still has many of those traits. And maybe that'll appeal to some. I know there are some that want that sort of a slightly
that
more
like rugged,
butch,
hard
rugged
push,
approach
you know?
To things.
Yes.
And that's the reason why the Defender sold so well for so long.
Yeah.
But just with the general trend, if you're going up against the likes of Rangers, Hiluxes, new Navaras, new Amarok coming, and now the Triton, you need to up your game because these cars are driving like luxury SUVs almost.
I must say, sorry, George, carry on.
No, go on. The BT50 from the back looks like a Saun or Fortuner.
It's got a little bit of the old Fortuner vibe, those sort of diamond taillights.
If I look at that bottom, it looks a little bit like the Fortuner and the top's just been chopped off.
Yeah,
the load box looks a bit deeper. Than the Mitsubishi.
Largely illusion. I think it is a little bit deeper, but they're all very much, very, very close spec on spec. I'll run through the specs just, like I said, we didn't have two head-to-head competitors here. It wasn't the top of the range, it was the top of the range Triton, but it wasn't the top of the range Mazda BT. But we just wanted to see, on a spec for spec, how do they compare? Just to give you an idea, okay, so we got you get 110 kilowatts from the 2.2 turbo diesel in the Mazda, whereas you're getting 133 from that new 2.4 turbo diesel in the Mitsubishi Triton. And it's a gem of a motor. I tell you what a quiet diesel motor.
You alluded to that in the video. I mean, you got it, because you and Lawrence actually swapped around.
Yeah, we swapped around as well. You know, we both picked one, and we supported that one, and then we swapped it around to see, listen, what's the other guy driving like? And really, the Triton, spoiler alert, the Triton does really come out head and shoulders above the BT50 in this test, but largely just because of its refinement. It is such a great drive. It really is pleasantly surprising what Mitsubishi has done with this new Triton.
So this, I mean, the predecessor of the Triton was the Colt.
Well, this is now second generation Triton, so the previous one to this one would have still been Triton, but before that would have been Colt, and of course Rodeo.
Yes, the Rodeo. Yeah. I had a Rodeo once upon a time.
That had the rope. Loved
that
the car. Rope branding along the
correct.
The
yes,
side.
Yes,
I mean,
yeah.
I remember that car.
Oh,
the
yeah,
car.
I know.
Yes, well, now I'm
but listen, the Mazda BT50 has also been around for yonks. I mean, even the nameplate BT50 has been around for quite a while now. So you know, it is established. These are not just newcomers like a Fiat Fullback.
Yeah.
These are completely new vehicles. I'm actually looking forward to the Mazda BT50 replacement. Because I think Mazda's going to do some good work there, and I'm quite keen to see it, because they've got new CX-5 launching, and Mazda's current range is so fantastic, just as a whole, that this is the weakest link in the entire offerings.
Okay.
And that's not a bad vehicle. I'm not going to say don't go for a BT50, but just know what you're getting into, and if you're looking for that sort of thing, then it's going to be great. I was a little surprised. I mean, the Mazda BT50 has a 6-speed auto, whereas it's only a 5-speed auto in the Triton, which seems a little backwards. That's the one thing that the Mazda sort of had up on it. Mazda also had a little more ground clearance. Mitsubishi was a little more road orientated. And the Mitsubishi is a little low on its towing capacity. It can only tow 1.5 tons braked, whereas the Mazda, with its that agricultural approach and that, 3.5 tons braked. So, you know, if you
so
are looking at...
there is still some use in that agricultural type
Absolutely. But 3.5 tons braked isn't anything over and above the rest of the competition. Okay. It's just over and above the Triton. Okay. So the Triton's a little soft in the pants there. You know, the 3.5 tons, you're going to get that from the Ranger and the Hilux and the likes as well. But, you know, the Mitsubishi's got some great odds and ends to it that really brings it up to date. The Mazda feels a little bit like add-ons. And sadly, there's too much Ford tie-in here still. Okay. Of course, Mazda and Ford, there were deals and put in place where, you know, there would be part sharing and information sharing and the likes. And that was still in effect when the original BT or when this sort of generation BT50 was made. Okay. And now with the facelift, they're sort of just weaning off and running the last of the parts. So you're still seeing SYNC style infotainment systems, and the steering controls are still very Ford based. Okay. And that said, it just drags it down because Mazda's got some fantastic interior trimmings and gear and infotainment that would do wonders in this thing. Yeah. One thing for the Mazda as well, and it's always a Mazda a highlight, 3-year unlimited kilometer warranty.
Well, that's fantastic.
All the messages are like that, and that always just tips things a little bit in the favor.
Exactly. Yeah, sure. Okay, well, you know, jump onto autotrader.co, go to news and reviews and go and check it out. Let us know your thoughts.
We've got a couple of great videos. I know we're pressed for time, but let's just tell you what's coming up. We have great reviews of the VW Up, and that's a fantastic one. If you're watching the Pocket, you need to watch that one about the space, price, and economy of the VW Up. And then an exciting new crossover, the Toyota CHR, which I tell you what, is an absolutely stylish vehicle, and it drives great with one of the best interiors I've seen in a long time.
Wow.
So, yeah, I gushed about that car a little bit. Fantastic little vehicle, and I know it's turning heads all over the place. Those are two videos that are coming shortly. You can take a look for it on our YouTube channel.
Awesome, awesome. Fantastic. Brilliant. Right, gents, into the our tech segment. I can't believe how quickly time goes when you're having fun.
Yeah, flies when you waffle on about drinking and driving.
Exactly. So, I came across this article, and I'm, you know, it's amazed me that the Nissan Leaf, and if you don't know what it looks like, you can jump onto autotrader.co because there are about 6 or 7 of them on our site. But Nissan Leaf to showcase energy transfer capabilities tailored for South Africa. George, I don't know if you want to touch on this a little bit for us, please.
Yeah, so the Nissan Leaf in partnership of, I don't even know how to say this,
Uhilo,
has an e-mobility program running. And what they want to do is they want to showcase the technology that enables powered stored in an electric vehicle to be used in home and commercial appliances. So what that actually means is, because, you know, currently hybrid vehicles, electric vehicles, store energy in the vehicle to be used for the vehicle. And what they're trying to showcase is that the stored energy inside the vehicle can now be used to power your house, to power your appliances. And the interesting part is you can sell this electricity back to the municipalities. So if you've got stored, you know, you're short of cash and you want to go plug your vehicle into a municipality charge station or however that it's gonna come about, you can go and sell electricity back. So I thought that was quite quite innovative. But
do you know what a rigmarole that'll be? With our parastatals, I'm sorry, they are not going to subscribe to that. They really aren't.
Sell electricity to you at R3 a kilowatt and buy it back at 30 cents.
You know, there's a...
Well, I mean, just remember, you're generating this electricity in the car, so it's not like you're buying electricity in the first place.
But you've still got to charge this vehicle. So
But remember, the vehicle also stores its own energy.
So you can use leftovers.
Leftovers to
boil a cup of coffee.
So besides selling the electricity, let's forget about that for a second, because I think that's the harder part to do. What's interesting is that they're calling it a V2G, which is vehicle to grid, which is the kind of selling the electricity in the vehicle back to the state. Vehicle to home, which means you can plug your vehicle in your home and you can use electricity in your home, and then a vehicle to load systems. So it allows for this battery not only to be used for mobility, but for energy storage and application purposes, which I think is absolutely
I think it's brilliant. And I know that
it's the first step forward, I think. I don't think it's an ideal solution at this current point in time with infrastructures and whatnots and plans put in place, but it's a great starting point.
But I think that's what this whole program that Nissan have embarked on with and I don't want to with the guys who are running this e-mobility program. And I think we'll unpack this further because I really want to try and dig into this.
Really, but take a look at that.
Their whole, you know, mandate and idea is to improve the kind of infrastructure within South Africa to be able to drive electric vehicles and not have to worry about, sure, but if I run out of battery, where am I going to plug in? What can I do? You know, and when we had that infrastructure, I think electric vehicle sales will go because it ultimately is cheaper. I think they're more expensive to buy off the bat, but your running costs are far
so
lower.
I mean, this technology is being rolled out in Japan since 2012 already. But what the reason they're looking at South Africa is because South Africa's the prime environment to have this sort of system because of our electricity woes.
And I think the distances that we drive
make it viable. And make it more viable. So I think, brilliant initiative. I can't wait for the day that my house and my car are self-sufficient,
completely off
the grid, and not reliant on anybody for supply.
100%. Well, I mean, if you think about it, the number of blackouts that we have and load shedding and all that kind of stuff, I mean, if we all plug in cars now into that grid, it's going to become an issue. So,
last thing, 2015 study found that running an electrical Leaf car costs 18,000 Rand less than a petrol car per annim.
Yeah.
Based on a South African annual mileage study of 30,000 kilometers, which I think is a good average.
We've always averaged, always maintained an average.
That comes down to just over 1,000 Rand a month less to run the car, the first electric car that hits South Africa that is affordable, I'm going to be driving one.
Well, I want to see if we can get our hands on one of these
Leafs
and actually take it for a spin. It'd really, really be interesting. I see 0 to 100 also 11.
Oh, electric cars are always faster.
11 seconds,
really cool. That's going to be quite quick. I think we've got some interesting electric content coming your way shortly.
Brilliant. Exactly, 100%. Well, listen, gents, I mean, that's our hour up. Again, it's been fantastic. If you're on the roads today, take it easy while you're making your way back. We hope that you have a fantastic week ahead. And as we said at the beginning of the show, follow us at AutoTraderSA and remember to use the hashtag AutoCentral. Until next week.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Bye-bye. CliffCentral.com.